And we are back with episode 259 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and things to add to CIA training manual. Guard roof. Grenades out of car. That'll do it.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I would definitely say that having a secret storehouse isn't all it's cracked up to be.
And this is Bronson from Australia, and to Edmund, I would just say that I think they went to the Khan Noonien Singh School of, spatial awareness and stuff.
Yes.
And I just have to say that I am Anomaly XB6783. But we are going to be talking about...
No, I am Anomaly XB6783.
That's next month.
I'm Anomaly XB6783, and so is my wife.
Wait, isn't it supposed to be 6783746?
Anomaly XB24601? No, I'm getting mixed up.
Yeah. Let's not break into song.
8675309. Oh, sorry.
Oh, there's all kinds of different ways that this episode has been referenced. But, yes, we are going to be talking, obviously, about that episode of Fringe and also the season finale for Burn Notice. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
We will discuss anything and everything about these episodes, so you have to be forewarned that you will be spoiled. But as always, we've waited a while, especially in this holiday break, before we do that. So you've had lots of time to catch up.
Oh, indeed, you have. You've had about 2 weeks to catch up. But yes, we are going to have to talk about first Fringe. And while we try to figure out exactly what the name of this episode was, we're going to go ahead and run the promo. So here we go.
What?
What?
A child observer.
The boy. He is important. We don't have much time.
He is not just a child.
He is an integral part of my plan.
Every conspiracy has a traitor.
You've been compromised.
You are trying to block your thoughts from me, but it will not last. Where are the fugitives?
Yes. Well, that's that promo alone gives us plenty to talk about. But, Bronstein, why don't you go ahead and give us the synopsis here?
Alrighty, well, Fringe Season 5, Episode 10, Anomaly XB6783. The team joins forces with Nina to recover a key piece of the plan that Walter created to defeat the Observers. A very generic plot summary, given that most of that is just what's been happening every episode this season, but I think it's safe to say this one was a cut above the rest, chief among them being that I guess they decided that since... this last run of the show wasn't going to be using Blair Brown quite as much, that to let her go out in a blaze of glory, so to speak. It was a hell of an episode. A really, really, really... Oh, I don't know what to think of it. Like, not dark exactly, although there were definitely some dark bits to it, but just very emotional, very determined to... Just wring all kinds of great reveals and moments out of the running time, and between what happened to Nina and the reaction to what happened to Nina, and then the big revelation of Donald, I just thought that everything was handled brilliantly. I think this is probably my favorite episode of the season.
Okay, Gary, how about you?
I really liked it. Like you said, obviously Nina shined through this episode, and it found me missing the character more than I thought I would for the short time I've known her. I really enjoyed how, of course, the Observer felt superior to her, but at the same time, she was mentally, at least for a short time, holding her own against him, and it was nice to see him frustrated that he couldn't quite get through the way he wanted to. There were some other really sort of interesting things. One, the boy Observer, Michael, didn't have any tech in him, so this obviously isn't some Borg-like thing where they put it in at an early age, I'm assuming, or it has something to do with his, what Whitmer call an aberration. So I'm sort of curious what that means. It seemed like this episode introduced a lot more questions than answers this time around, but that was fine. I thought it was all so well done. It was really fun to watch. Also, the, when Winmark was interviewing all the employees at the I'm not sure if it was actually Nina's plant or just one of their plants. It's interesting how everybody's standing in line. I get the sense that this happens more than we think, and it just seemed like it was a very well rehearsed. People are used to having this happen to them, which, you know, seemed ominous in and of itself. I still, for the life of me, and I'm hoping that someone of you guys can enlighten me on this whole Donald. Donald September link, and I mean, I saw the flashes and stuff, and I really felt I was paying attention, but it seemed to go over my head a little bit, and I didn't quite grasp it. I didn't quite see how Walter was making the connection, and was that September with hair, or was I just imagining that?
Yeah, no, it was September with hair. It threw me as well too, because just all through Fringe, and then in the couple of other things, you know, shows or whatnot where that actor has popped up, it's been, you know, bald as a. Just no, yeah, no, no. There is no comparison. Observers are the go to thing to compare bald people to. But yeah, it was just suddenly wait, just hey, but
and then oh, I have to ask myself, is he an aberration too? What? As I said, it was more questions than answers this episode.
Yeah, I suspect that will wind up being September's deal. That he is some kind of relatively minor aberration, not as I don't know, something that could have been missed. Maybe, or something that didn't develop until he had gone back in time and met up with the Fringe team and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, apart from the fact that he may be a you know, client of the Hair Club for Men, I don't know that there's much other than the fact that they now have alluded to the fact that September is Donald, and that is how he apparently hid from the other observers to help with the resistance. How that happened, we don't know. Did he have the tech removed? If so, then how come nobody knew about the tech? There's just a whole bunch of questions that this raises, but they didn't really say enough for there to be clarity as to how that might have come to pass. It certainly threw me for a loop because I was sure that Donald was going to turn out to be William Bell. So,
mm-hmm.
Edmund, how about you? What are your thoughts on this?
Certainly the whole, you know, that Donald being September is bad. Especially after, you know, all, you know, there've been Peter took the tech, and then, you know, and there was, it seemed to be, you know, confirming a lot of the fan speculation that, you know, oh no, Peter's going to become September, you know, until, you know, we discovered it's, you know, the tech is easily removable. But yeah, but what got to me about that whole twist was, you know, the fact that Michael Servers is in the credits, you know, so I'm thinking it's like, okay, September's going to be in this, you know, and then it wasn't until that final bit when it's like, oh my! You know, wait a minute, that is him with hair. And, you know, we've just gotten so used to seeing him in his you know, in his observer guise that you know, I thought that was really, really, really well done, because even occasional appearances that he's had, even, you know, like watching, you know, playoff, you know, baseball playoff games on Fox, you know, when they're, you know, they're in break, you know, but of course he's still in, you know, in kind of, you know, you know, half of, you know, observer makeup, you know, he's got his eyebrows shaved off, etc. So it's like, you know, it was a real nice fake out that, you know, yeah, we haven't really seen Michael Servers and, you know, as a regular person. So no, I particularly appreciated that. And you know, and yeah, and certainly, you know, after feeling like, you know, Nina and Broyles had you know, been kind of getting short shrift through this final arc, it was really nice to see Nina, you know, as has been said, you know, go out in that blaze of glory and, you know, get a real moment to shine there. So I even had a brief moment, I mean, you know, when they found him, and thinking it's like, you know, well, you know, wait a minute, couldn't they have searched a, you know, a little better, you know, but sort of thinking back on it, I mean, no, I mean, that's, you know, again, credit to Nina in terms of, you know, keeping the focus so much on her, and then, you know, and then what she did. You know, it just made perfect sense, you know, and also given the fact he's hiding, you know, under these observers, they're just going to get them uncomfortable anyway. And, you know, so, you know, even that one little sort of moment I had of, you know, like, well, wait a minute, does this really make sense? Even that in retrospect was like, you know, no, actually it does. And certainly, you know, as, you know, we were talking, a couple of episodes back about Doctor Who, where, you know, a lot of it seemed like setup, and, you know, yeah, some of this did feel like setup for our grand finale, but still done in a very satisfying manner.
The thing that kind of bothered me about it was that it felt like this could or should have been two or three episodes worth of material. There were a couple things that were very glossed over. Certainly, I loved seeing what we did see of Nina, and the way that she finally factored into the arc, and she got to actually be heroic after five seasons of not knowing exactly where she stood with anything. We got I really wish that she had been in more episodes, and it did make me think that, wow, after revealing how important Broyles was to the entire equation, we haven't seen him since. And here's another episode where we didn't, and ostensibly we probably should have. Considering that, didn't Broyles and Nina have something of a relationship at one point? You know, they never really got to pay that off in any way. Unless we see something next time, but, you know, that still doesn't feel like it's the optimal way to go with it. I don't know. It felt like it more highlighted all of the things that we didn't get to see, as well as giving Blair Brown really a great send-off for the series.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I mean, it's, you know, I guess it's one of those things where I'm so happy that they're at least getting the final run, that there's, you know, there's part of me that turns off some of the critical facilities as we're going through this. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly been enough stuff set up here. And also just the whole thing of, you know, introducing this whole future timeline and then, you know, just having to go through it in 13 episodes, you know. Yes, in that alternate universe on the other side of the bridge, you know, where, you know, they at least got a full fifth season. You know, we would have seen some more of that storyline. And certainly even just, you know, in terms of, you know, what Gary is mentioning about, you know, the way everybody's lining up and even just the whole dynamics in Nina's office, you know, I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of the dynamics of this Observer world that we haven't really gotten to explore the way we did the, you know, the alternate universe and, you know, eventually getting to know all of the alt fringe team and, the way that, you know, getting actually a sense of the way their society worked. As I said, it's, you know, I'm still just happy we're at least getting to see what we're seeing. But, you know, I guess that's just the, you know, Fox has diminished my expectations over the years. So.
Well, no, I agree. We are getting these nice little tidbits, you know, and I love some of the Observer tech that they are throwing out at us. And, you know, that device that was an LQ7 that they hooked up to the glass on Nina's door to be able to read her phone call. You know, that was almost as good as the disintegration ray that she'd gotten for them earlier in the season. It's like, oh, wow, somebody's really thinking of some nice, cool gadgets to just throw the heck in here. You know, that the little Observer dart thing that goes into your neck. You know, whoever the prop guy is, I have to give him credit, too. They're coming up with some cute little things there here towards the end.
Yeah, I agree. This was definitely a really fun look into some of the technology that they have pulled out of their hat, and it is another callback to some of the weird things that they had back in the first season. Again, they're doing a lot of that, I think. But Bronston, what do you think about the lack of balance in terms of the supporting cast?
I think that there was a very good reason why they dropped everyone except Peter, Olivia, Astrid, and Walter. It's because there was not a lot for them to do, unfortunately, and so rather than have them just hang around and do nothing, they're just not going to have them around. Both approaches have their pros and cons. I've seen a lot of shows where characters have just hung around the show despite, you know, being well past their expiry date. I mean, they've got nothing to contribute to the ongoing story, but because they've been with the show from the beginning, or because, you know, people like the actors, you know, the producers like the actors or something like that, they stick around in ways that feel really fake and forced and stuff like that. And so this is, of the two approaches, I think what Fringe has been doing this season is slightly better by just not trying to force Broyles and Nina and other characters like that into every episode. Instead, you know, just say, okay, we know that they're around in the background, and when we need them, they're going to bring them in. And of course, getting to the last few episodes, like, you know, with Nina, they've clearly decided, okay, they don't think they can, she's going to contribute anything to the end game. So give her a big moment to shine. And a big moment it was. It was just incredibly well done series of scenes, and I would rather I much prefer her getting this kind of big send-off than just sticking around aimlessly.
I wouldn't put it aimlessly, though, because I think that there were things that they hinted at that they could and probably should have shown. There were the things about Nina's place in their society and the fact that she was caught in between helping the resistance and being a very visible member of the community. Not only that, but there was that whole thing that they were talking about where she was actually able to resist them pretty well, that I think would have been fun to explore that at a at some point or another, because up until now we've had the feeling that Etta was able to not be read for a very special reason, and now it seems maybe there was more going on there, and yet that's something that's not going to really be able to be explored. So I think that there were things that could have been done. Maybe it was a matter of budget. I mean, I can't leave that out of the equation. We know that this final season is being basically put together on a shoestring, and it's amazing what they've been able to do with what little they have. But I do feel like that might have had something to do with it. I still feel like Broyles, on the other hand, given his position, should really be more prominent. I was expecting him to be more of the, you know, that inside man what? Type of thing. Some of the things that they maybe alluded to in Letters of Transit that never quite materialized this season. But I know, will come in later, so.
I sincerely doubt they're just going to not revisit him at all. And yeah, I've missed Broyles, and I have missed Nina, specifically like the Nina that we'd been seeing in season 4, who had a much stronger relationship with the characters. But I guess it's, I'm trying to think how to explain it. The story would have had to expand in scope in order to keep all of those characters in it. And for I imagine that budget is kind of a factor as well. I mean, they're trying to, much like Supernatural, they're trying to do the apocalypse on a budget. And we saw how that went. So I imagine that's a bit of a factor too. So I don't know. I guess, I'm still back to this thing that, like, I as much as I wish they were around more, I would rather they only come in when they've got something significant to do than just faff about a bit.
Mm. Now, right now, we've also got this this piece of the mythology that's been dropped in, where now the quote unquote boy, who's not really a boy, is you know, basically the key to everything. And as fans of the X-Files can attest, this is a nice oblique, yet another oblique callback to the X-Files and their mythology, and quite possibly a way of doing it much, much better. But I guess I'm getting a little concerned, because as we know, the final 3 hours of the season are upon us, and that's supposed to be effectively a three-part finale, even though it's not really stated that way. That's what it's supposed to be. So now we've got the mystery surrounding this anomaly, who is not really a child, but a misdesigned, malformed observer from a time indeterminate that was supposed to be destroyed, that doesn't have any tech. But we've also still got that plan that Walter was thinking of that has been lingering in the background. And how does the anomaly play into that? I mean, clearly the next episode is called The Boy Must Live, so I'm sure it's going to factor in somehow, but I still feel like
I hear that and think clearly he's going to die horribly.
Yeah, right.
Because we're in finale territory.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, you know, there's three episodes left, and that's, I guess, the problem that I'm struggling with here is that I'm glad that they really are hitting the accelerator here, but at the same time, I feel like there's still so much to cover. I'm worried that they're going to have to rush through it at the end. And I feel like we're already, as grateful as I am to get this 13-episode season, I feel like they almost took a 22-episode season arc and compressed it, even though they knew they only had 13 episodes, that they're maybe biting off more than they can narratively chew. Because it just feels like there's a lot of loose threads that they need to pull together still. You know, we still got the thing about the posters of Etta that are out there and what that represents, and that really hasn't gone in too many places yet. There's just a lot of things they've introduced that I don't know that they have any easy way to wrap them up right now. I'm not saying that I don't feel confident that they can do at least a really good attempt at it. I'm just worried that it's going to end up feeling sloppy when it comes down to it. So even though this was, I'm saying all this, agreeing with you, Bronson, this is a really strong episode. Maybe not the best episode of the season for me, but still a really strong one.
I don't know. See, on the strength of that, just of that really powerful string of scenes. I mean, not just. I mean, from the moment that Nina's final scene begins, there's just like the character. You can just see this sense come over her of this is the end. And she will make it such an end, and she really does. Like the character takes the opportunity, goes toe to toe with Widmark, and denies him his victory every way she can. And then the scene immediately after, where they come in and they find her body, and that really disturbingly beautiful image of the puddle of blood on the floor with her glasses in it and reflected in it. You see Olivia come into the room. And just everything that follows there was just it was so well done.
Yeah, I can't disagree. That's the thing, is that there were a lot of really strong scenes about this, but I think that still it's the larger context that's has me concerned right now. All right, well, what I mean, you said I don't know if you said off the top exactly what you would give this one, but saying that it was your favorite of the season so far, I'm guessing it's pretty high.
Yeah, I would. I think that would have to be a 9. I don't think I've given anything a 10.
You gave The Bullet That Saved the World a 10.
Okay. So now that's not surprising. Okay, maybe it's not my favorite episode in the thing, because now that I think back, okay, there's again, episodes with a really, really incredibly strong emotional climax. So, okay, I would go to a 9. Mm-hmm. Okay, not my favorite episode of the season, but a close second, for very similar reasons.
Mm. Gary, you've been kind of silent for a little while. Any other thoughts on this episode?
No. I did really like it. As I said, it introduced a lot more questions, I felt, than resolutions. And this, gosh, it's really late, but at the same time, they were good questions. I like the whole developments, even if I don't even quite understand what's going on with September. But that was still, at least it was a push forward to find out who the heck Donald was, I was glad one way or the other it was resolved. I'm going to give it a 9. I really enjoyed it, but it just wasn't quite to the pinnacle of a 10 that I'm hoping one of the next few episodes will be. But it was a solid episode. Nina's goodbye was, you know, heartfelt and touched, and Walter's reaction, the non-drugged Walter reaction, was nice to see. You know, John did a great job acting that out. I could feel his, you know, his frustration while losing the person, as well as his chance to have his brain again cut into and removed. So I, like I said, it worked well in a lot of ways, and so I'm gonna be up there with Bronston. I'm gonna give it a 9 this time.
Edmund, how about you?
Oscillating between an 8 and a 9, and I think over the course of this discussion, I have gone back to a 9, and also one thing became clear to me, I was forgetting about the budgetary stuff. So yes, I understand why they couldn't do all of the Observer world building, but all I can hope for is that it might continue in novels or graphic novels.
Something, right? Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and round us out here with another 9, because even though I do have my concerns, the episode itself was very strong. Not quite the pinnacle, but I think it was at least close to on par with The Bullet That Saved the World in terms of really ramping up the stakes and the emotional impact. All right, well, that being the case, I think that we have another show that is coming to the end of its 6th season, and, well, I think that we're probably going to be a little less effusive about this one, but that's probably no surprise to anyone else. Here we go with the promo for the last 2 episodes of Burn Notice for this season. So here we go.
Thursday.
She's gone from capturing us to killing us. What are we going to do?
We take the fight to her.
They look like they're ready for a war zone.
We're outnumbered. We're outgunned.
I promised Sam I would make this right.
Michael, what have you done?
Whatever you do, make it spectacular, man. Wish me luck.
Go, Fee, go!
Michael, what just happened?
We finished this today. One way or another.
Okay, and Edmund, why don't you give us the recaps for these 2 episodes?
Okay, this is Burn Notice Season 6, Episode 17, You Can Run. Sam and Jesse are caught in the crossfire when the gang are ambushed while attempting to make their escape. And then season 6, episode 18, which is Not But You Cannot Hide, it's Game Change. A group of assassins targets the gang, forcing Michael to go on the offensive in the season 6 finale. Yeah, this was, it's been this odd run up to the end of this 6th season when they've been supposedly trying to get away all this time, and they just sort of continue their tour of all their regular haunts in Miami. But the basic breakdown, it was in the first episode, our CIA nemesis ambushing everybody, Jesse getting captured, Sam getting shot, and then Michael and Fiona, as I alluded to in the opening, managing to rather easily take down the CIA safe house, strong house, where they where they've kept Jesse, keep everything rolling along. And then in the last episode, it basically transmutes into them having to go up against the cartel that involved with earlier in the season. And now that Olivia has decided to completely turn on them, sicked a drug cartel to assassinate them. You know, so we have, you know, it's basically having brought Bly back as Michael's potential way back, you know, way out of this, if he decides to just turn himself in. It's then all about them basically getting the goods on her, showing she's turned rogue, until, of course, all of that goes south. You know, I really wish I could switch up these reviews, but it really comes down to, once again, I mean, it's Burn Notice doing stuff that's sort of classic Burn Notice, you know. No, but it still really feels, you know, not that it's not entertaining in its own right, and, you know, on the surface, etc., but it's still just continuing to feel like stuff that we've seen again and again and again. And even, you know, the, you know, just to jump all the way to the end, I mean, the whole upshot of this, of they do get through it. She, you know, our latest rogue CIA agent, you know, does confess. I was rather amused at the Coast Guard finally getting to show its military muscle. That was that was a fun little twist that you don't usually see. You know, and then this whole thing of it coming down to Michael essentially making a deal to let everyone else get out of jail free, and he's back in the CIA. And so it's, we come around to, you know, okay, he was back in, then he got burned again, and now he's back in, but he's betrayed Fiona, and, you know, and his mom probably isn't going to be too happy, and you know, Sam and Jesse, who knows? So, you know, I guess there is a thread going through into season 7, but it still feels like once again, it is Burn Notice just sort of cycling through all of their standard bag of tricks. And, you know, as I say, not that it's terrible television, you know, but it's really, it's, you know, they are a long way away from doing anything original, unfortunately.
Okay. Maybe you can help me here.
Yeah.
But I must have missed something along the way, because for the life of me, I couldn't understand why Fiona was so damn upset at the end.
Because she thought she was going to get away with that Michael was out of the business, that he was escaping.
Just when we thought we were out, they pulled us back in.
Doesn't she know the show by now?
Because God knows the rest of us are very familiar with the formula.
It just felt a little over the top to me, her sense of betrayal, because hasn't he shown 1,000 times over by now that he'll do whatever it takes for them? Even if means getting in bed with the enemy. I mean, to get her out of jail? I mean,
Not to mention, you know, in the early seasons, that was one of the big running things about, you know, her and Sam going on to them about, you know, why the heck do you even want to get back into the CIA? You know, and him just being hell bent on, you know, no, you know, it's a, you know, I want to find out who burned me. You know, I want to get back in. So, you know, there is a certain element of, you know, yes, this has been, you know, what the show has been largely, has been basically about.
But I just don't get the fact that, you know, knowing that, but it's not even that he's doing this really of his own accord. He's doing this because it's the only way to get everybody out
of them out.
Yeah, to get them out of the fire. And Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like he hasn't shown that he's willing to do whatever it takes.
Well,
that's
no,
kind of
wait,
the point.
Wait. They talked about this. Fiona directly talked about it. He does what he thinks he should be done, not necessarily what needs to be done, but what he thinks should be done. They had this talk about it in, I forget which of the two episodes, but they were discussing this exact point that she feels this is selfish, that almost, you know, he's doing what he feels he is best for him to do to resolve the situation. Not the best thing to resolve the situation, but what he thinks he should do, that he doesn't get input, that he doesn't, you know, he only goes with the path that he decides to go. And admit that might not be why she's crying or upset at him per se in that scene, but it's a, you know, characteristic of the whole show. And we talk about this, yes, it's a classic Burn Notice format, but, you know, but still, it was, for this end of the season, it was a pretty good ending. You know, as we've looked at them botching other season finales with Jesse, with Anson, you know, we complained that we didn't like the way it ended, but I have to say I was happy with this ending. Fiona wasn't, but I thought it was a good way to sum it up. And yes, this is never going to be a show that takes extreme risks. You're not, if you're watching this show this long, you know it's not that show. It's meant to be this sort of popcorn show that we just sit back and like watching the formula roll out with slightly different permutations, but not over the top crazy. So I have to say, the show is what it is, and this season it picked up a lot, and I think at the end they delivered a solid ending.
Hmm.
I can't say I feel robbed or cheated at this ending the way I have in other seasons.
I'm a little bit, I don't know, I'm kind of, I understand what you're saying, and I don't think that this was a horrible ending to the season. At the same time, I'm bugged by the fact that, as Edmund pointed out, we're pretty much right where we started at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Nate doesn't feel that way.
Well, Nate may not. But for all that we've gone through, I don't think it's this season that it is. Isn't it the fifth season, pretty much, that when he went back to the CIA and there was that mm-hmm. whole business with. So, I mean, we're really backtracking two seasons worth of time here, and everything that's happened in between might as well have not even happened. Mm-hmm. And that just bugs the hell out of me, because really, if you think about it, they got picked up for two seasons. These were the two seasons. They literally didn't go anywhere.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one who felt like that. It was just this huge backtracking in how the season ended. The other thing that also really, really, really annoyed me is that even though Riley has only been around for a few episodes, she was one of the more interesting villains interesting antagonists because she wasn't villainous.
Hmm.
And she was a different kind of threat. It was just like, you know, it was to get into current movies. She was the Javert, that very classic character type who is, you know, she's doing everything she can to take out the good guys, but the good guys know that they can't just turn around and take her out because she is a good guy trying to do the right thing and for a very legitimate reason. It made for an interesting dynamic, and it's why they had to run instead of turning around trying to do something from it. So just in this last episode, they decide to, okay, no, let's turn around and actually make her a villain so that therefore we can have, you know, a big showdown and whatnot. It just bugged the hell out of me.
Hmm.
I agree. I mean, yeah, because when she was introduced, it was sort of, you know, like, oh, good, finally we're going to have, you know, an ultra-competent, you know, CIA antagonist, you know, who can really go sort of, you know, head-to-head with Michael, and then to turn it into, you know, yes, you know, just, you know, yet just another bad apple, and even in terms of the sort of, you know, the setup for that, I mean, that's where, you know, that's what gets me about the limitations of the show, I guess, is that, you know, no, I mean, if they, other shows, they could have played a little bit more with, you know, her, you know, no, her getting increasingly frustrated, you know, not being able to, you know, get them the regular way, and then, you know, having to, you know, feeling she has to go outside the box. You know, and that didn't really happen. I mean, it was more just, you know, we had these couple of episodes where she wasn't even really appearing or featured at all, you know, as they were running around with the smugglers, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, and I think that's where my main annoyance is, especially since, you know, we have the producers, you know, running around saying that, you know, no, you know, they want to do, you know, more serialized stuff. And then they wind up, you know, putting stuff out where they don't allow characters to develop. You know, they wind up falling back on, you know, sort of this standard burn notice structures, and it's like, no, I mean, just play with it a little bit, you know.
I agree. They could have stretched Riley out.
I can't believe USA Network is that rigid that they can't get a little more leeway in how they structure things.
And yeah,
they claim that was what they do.
Right, exactly. It's they're saying that we're moving and we're being a lot more serialized and we're taking chances, and you end up in the same spot that you started two seasons ago.
Yeah,
but
that's not taking a chance. That's devolving.
The problem that I have with the whole thing with Riley is that, yes, I agree, she turned out to be a far more interesting antagonist for them than we've seen in a long time. Certainly much better than Anson ever was. And yet, did it seem to you like it was just a little too easy for Michael to get one over on her?
Mm-hmm.
When they finally had the confrontation, it was one act in the boat? That's it?
Yeah.
He basically talked her down?
Mm-hmm.
That just felt unrealistic. I mean, granted, this is burn notice. I understand there are certain concessions to be made, but
I think she went to obsessive pretty quickly. Yes, I agree. I think they could have stretched this out over a whole second season with Riley if they really wanted to, and showed her progression a little slower than it actually happened. But I could see her reaching that point eventually. But I agree, it came very fast.
Yeah, well, I mean, what got to me was the fact that even within these episodes, there was enough time to show it, except they decided to, just ignore her for some of the time. So, But certainly now, I mean, and even in terms of some of the other, endings they've had in season finales, whether they know they're coming back. I mean, they tend to do even a little bit more of a cliffhanger in terms of, where there's, been some major shift and you're really wondering, what's Michael going to do now? And with this one, it's like, okay, so Michael's in and everyone else is free and they're probably going to be kind of ticked off at him. But, I'm not feeling like a huge hug to draw me back in.
All right. Well, Bronstam, you've kind of alluded to your thoughts on this, but do you have anything that you would like to add?
Not really. It's just... my usual apathy towards Burn Notice that's really been growing over this last season in particular was just made worse by things that were done in a particularly dumb way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It feels like to me like in the hands of better writers, this could have been pretty good. I mean, it just feels very ham-fisted and sloppy. Like I said, to have the whole thing with Riley get so out of control so quickly and not really culminate into a big showdown. I'm thinking back to season, I guess it was 4, when they had that showdown for the mid-season finale on the pier or wherever it was, when Jesse, no one was sure if Jesse was going to shoot Michael or not. And, Michael was seriously wounded. And I mean, that was a huge sequence. This was not really on par with that. Yes, you had the Coast Guard shooting at them, but it was basically off screen. And maybe that's a budget thing, and I can understand that. But even so, it felt like this just kind of wrapped up because it had to wrap up. They tooled around in Miami for 8 episodes trying to escape.
Yeah,
I can't believe it's that hard to get out of Miami. But anyway,
you think that get in a car and drive.
Or surrounded by water, that you can hop on a boat or,
Couldn't get a rowboat anywhere, a dinghy.
Well, considering nothing. That everything else going around them was business as usual, we didn't see anything really changing as a part of this big manhunt. So I'm thinking you've got millions of people. These guys have pulled out off how many false identities and everything else. And suddenly now they have a hard time getting out anyway. They were just in quote-unquote Panama just before this. So, anyway. I think that we can probably break this up because the first half was the episode where basically, I can't let this go because I kind of alluded to it. Let's go ahead and put one of the main cast members in mortal danger, constantly talk about how he's on the brink of death. Anyone else think that was really going to happen?
Actually, no. I'll be honest. There were some scenes early in the first half of the episode where I thought, especially given that they'd alluded in a couple of earlier episodes of Sam being unhappy with how it all went down, but it wasn't so much a, oh no, Sam might die, as it was a, okay, great, now I've got to keep watching Burn Notice and Bruce Campbell's not going to be in it.
Exactly. I mean, it was like, oh no, please, not one of the few things that's still dependable on this show.
Yeah.
Well, thankfully, he didn't really go anywhere. So let's say You Can Run, which was effectively the Jesse and Sam in Jeopardy hour. Yeah. What would you give that, Bronstum?
I don't know. I'm just 5.
Okay.
I was bored.
Okay, Gary, how about you?
I'm gonna go with 7. I actually, in that episode, I sort of liked the Bly interaction with that was going on, and I thought it was a nice little twist early on in this two-parter, and so that, and I thought they were setting up things well in this part of the episode. So yeah, I'm gonna stick with a 7.
Okay, Edmund, how about you?
I will split the difference and go 6 on this one.
Okay, and I also agree with a 6 on this one. It was not terrible, but it still was lacking in a few, largely because I didn't feel like any of the regulars were going to actually be in any jeopardy, regardless of what they said.
Yeah.
I mean, to go from almost dying of sepsis to manhandling a special ops guy, anyway. That brings us to the actual finale, which was Game Change. Bronstum, how about this one?
Yeah, no change, still 5. It was just, like, I'm so sick of this show, really. It's just, it's just failing miserably. And even, I mean, it has its episodes where it's not doing anything particularly bad, but it's just become so formulaic and by the numbers that I'm bored of it. But then this one on top of it has all this stuff with the way that they screwed with Riley and the way that the finale came out, that I was just, you know, bored with a side of actively upset.
Okay. Gary, how about you?
I'm going to give it a 6. I never expect much from Burn Notice anymore. So my low expectations, well, are usually at least met, if not slightly exceeded. So I'm going to give it a 6. I probably would have dropped to a 5, except the revelation at the end of this where Jesse finds the file and sees that Riley was toying with him the whole time. I thought that was a very emotional scene, and that pulled it up probably a full point for me.
Okay. Edmund, how about you?
I'm down at a 5 with this one. I knew the file was blank.
So. Oh!
Too many spies. Anyway.
I think, part of me thinks Jesse knew the file was blank too. But also, I mean, in this one, I mean, just that. I'm sorry, that absurdity of the grenade, and Michael gets out and Bly all of a sudden can't operate his seatbelt, just, aside from everything
else.
Damn
it, why didn't they teach a seatbelt in secret agent school? No, curses!
Yeah, I would have to agree with the 5. That one was very disappointing, because I felt like I just wasted 2 seasons worth of watching the show. I didn't want to feel that way, but, you know, that's the way it goes. All right. Well, I mean, we've got to sum this up, and I'll put it this way. Bronstum, you came in for this season at roughly a 5.6,
sounds
so
about
well
right.
Below average. Gary, you were the one still holding the torch, so to speak, with a 6.6, but that's still below average. Edmund, you came in around a 6.3. And I came in around a 6.1, and for the entire season, we have 6.1 as the average. So just a tick into the average category, but very much on the low end.
That's about what it deserves. I think that's fair. Yeah.
Once again, we can only say that this show has been disappointing this season, despite their promises at a more cohesive arc. And only once did we have an episode that went above a 7.
Mm-hmm.
And that's way back in the episode Shockwave. Way back in the beginning of the season. So, yeah, that's kind of speaks... kind of tells the story. It speaks volumes. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...